Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Ananda. I want to welcome especially those of you who may be new to Ananda today, and also some guests we have visiting from India. We'll meet them a little bit later on, but we are glad to have you here with us today. Welcome. So topic today is how do devotees rise? I want to define some of these terms here, especially for new folks. Devotee is somebody who is devoted. Somebody who is devoted to truth, who wants to know the truth, wants to know what life is all about. And I think many of us find our way into churches like this when what we think life is all about, what we're devoted to out there in the world, the jobs we're looking for, the perfect house, the perfect partner, the perfect whatever outside of our own selves. When it doesn't quite stay in place, it's kind of like the little hedgehog in Alice in Wonderland, you know, that just kind of keeps moving, even though it's supposed to stay in place. The world can be like that. And especially now when the economy is a little bit iffy, you know, it's kind of like earthquakes. People who've never been in earthquakes before and think the ground is nice and stable, and all of a sudden it goes like this. You know, you realize that everything you've sort of pinned your hopes on is just kind of going like this. And what do you do then? A lot of people find their way into churches at times like that. And become devotees, thinking there must be something else to be devoted to, you know. So Gary, fortunately, last week addressed the topic, how do devotees fall, which is always kind of a, you know, but he did a great job on that. So this week we get to talk about how do devotees rise, and those readings were great. I want to talk about some obvious things, you know, how do devotees rise? Well, they rise by getting out of bed, and they rise maybe by yeast. I don't know, maybe that causes them to rise. Or maybe they rise by, you know, kind of lightening up and floating and levitating. I don't know, that's possible. But we'll address each of those things. So getting out of bed, yeah, it's important. There's a recording by Yogananda that talks about forsaking the sleep of this world, this dream consciousness we're in. I had this great experience the other day where I was kind of out hiking. And near a house I was unfamiliar with, kind of dark though, you know, sort of had a feeling that people inside were maybe not people I really wanted to be around or didn't know that well, but I somehow needed to get inside. I was really hungry. And so I just kind of knocked on the door, but somebody unfamiliar came to the door and it got kind of confusing. And they came outside and started talking with some other people. And then I realized I really needed my backpack and it just wasn't anywhere around me. And meanwhile, there was this warehouse action kind of happening outside. And then I realized, dude, you're dreaming. Wake up. Your backpack is home. You don't need to find it here, you know. So it's like that sometimes. And to the great masters, they are, you know, I heard a talk by Yogananda recently where he talked about the astral world and said that I spend most of my time there, you know, and just kind of visit here every once in a while. And that's not even the highest world, you know. I mean, there's worlds higher than that, but it's much more beautiful and much more harmonious and like that. But to those masters that spend that kind of time on those other planes of consciousness, this one here that we're so used to inhabiting, you know, and we'll talk about why that is, why that difference there. But to them, this is a dream. And they are awake. There's that comment by Buddha when after he had his enlightenment and people came up and saw him and kind of scratched their head. They knew something was different about him. But they said, are you a deva? You know, kind of an angel? And he said, no. Are you a demon? Okay, I know there's that movie out there, Angels and Demons, but he said, no. Well, then, are you a god? No. Are you a man? No. Well, then what are you? I am awake. So these masters that have achieved that state of consciousness, to them, they've awakened. And you know what it's like when you wake out of that dream that's just real confusing and things aren't just kind of fitting together real well and just kind of going the wrong way, and then you wake up and say, whew, boy, that was really strange. You're kind of glad to be back in a normal consciousness where things make more sense. So to the great masters, it's like that, and they want nothing more than to come to us and say, okay, I know how to have you get out of this confusion. I know where your backpack is. So if we're smart, we follow the advice, you know, like a sports team. If you want to be really, really good, like what's the name of the swimmer that was here recently? Michael Phelps, that's right, yeah. If you want to be, you know, like strong and a really good swimmer like Michael Phelps, you know, suppose you're thinking, okay, swimming would be really fun. I wonder how I could get really good at that. Well, chances are after a while you're going to find a coach, a swimming coach. And if you go up and say, "Coach, I want to be a really good swimmer," that looks so good seeing him swim on the Olympics and on TV and stuff. The coach says, "Okay, great. Here's the lesson plan. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to come here at 5 o'clock every morning, and you're going to swim, well, let's say if you're a starter, you're going to swim, you know, like maybe 20 laps, and then we'll work up to 50, and then we'll work up to 200, and then we'll work up to 1,000 eventually." You say, well, wait a minute. I'm not interested in getting up at 5 in the morning. I just want to like be a really good swimmer like Michael Phelps on TV, you know? It's like, okay, but here's the lesson plan. Here's what you need to do. It's like, well, no, I don't think so. I think maybe I'll go talk to somebody else. Thank you. So the great gurus, they come here and they have the lesson plan to help us get out and become the strong kind of athletes that we want to be, you know, to have the happiness that we're really seeking. And if we're smart, we listen to the coach and we follow the lesson plan. And it's great because we have just really obvious, simple things. There's a whole bunch of them, but we don't have to do every single one. Yogananda said, "I'll give you 100 things to do, but you only have to do 10% of them and you'll get there." So the obvious things we have to do, meditate. You know, they keep talking about the same, I say they, the great masters who've gotten where we want to go. They keep saying, okay, the way to find happiness is you get calm. You do that twice a day, ideally, morning, night. Get calm enough to listen to the voice of God inspire you. And there's simple techniques that we teach, that others teach, that enable us to just calm those restless waves and be able to tune in and hear what the lesson plan is. And it's so wonderful when we do, because then we find that we can kind of see the sense behind life. We begin to appreciate the harmony, the show. You know, we're not as thrown by it. When the economy just goes like this, we can appreciate the fact that it's not pleasant, you know, to be thrown up like that. But we can understand from a central point of view just, okay, all right, so this is what's happening. How do I deal with it? How do I respond? And so, as I was saying earlier, that recording of Yogananda, he says, "Dream is over, nightmare is over, today I am a man." And he says, say it with me, "Dream is over, nightmare is over, today I am a man." I have a friend who recorded that as a loop over and over and over again. Played it to himself as a wake-up thing in the morning, you know, it automatically, "Dream is over, nightmare is over." It's great. So the idea of just waking up, it's a good thing to do. So in the morning, when the sleep kind of shakes off, it's a perfect thing to just get up out of bed. And if you know the super conscious living exercises that we teach you, those are really fun if you're crazy to just sort of do those first thing in the morning and wake yourself up. And then get yourself to the meditation room and sit down and say, okay, God, I'm going to make you the central thing in my day. This is how I'm starting my day with you right beside me. Then we can go off and do our service. You heard the readings today that were great about working cheerfully. You know, it's not as though we're supposed to not live our lives, to not be who we are. It's really silly as a devotee when you're thinking, and how do I do this spiritual lesson plan? Okay, mistake many people make is I need to be like them. I need to sort of, you know, not be me and let me go and sort of try to step into their clothes and imitate them. Well, it's nice to be inspired by other people that we are impressed by, that we're, you know, especially the guru, the teacher, spiritual teacher. But we have to realize that the whole point is to help us be more ourselves. We don't do that with the ego, with, okay, I want this, I want that. We just spin around in circles then. But the more we can say, okay, God, what do you want? That's the yeast that's inside of us. When more and more we're just calling on God, being mindful of God, saying, all right, here I am in this job situation. It's a challenge. There's lots of people calling at me back and forth. They want more than I can deliver in less time than I have. What do I do here? But when you call on God, just be mindful at those times and say, okay, how can we do this? Help me out here. It's so sweet. It's like the child who calls on the parent and finally, after 20 years, says, hey, I'd really like to learn something. What do you have to tell me? Parent says, you're asking me finally after all this time? You know, yeah, I really want to know what you have to teach me. Wow. The parent would just give unendingly to that child. So it is with the spiritual teachers, with the gurus. As soon as we ask, in the middle of our daily life, in the middle of our relationships, in the middle of our, you know, greatest trials, in the middle of our joys, if we share it with God, involve God, then it's so sweet. We find, you know, you think that in order to live the spiritual life, you have to, somehow we rebel against it. We're so independent, and it's a good thing. And we want to have control over our lives and go where we want. It's a great quality, a very American quality, to just not have anybody tell me what to do. I'm going to go do what I want to do. And so we think that, okay, by bringing discipline, spiritual discipline in, by meditating a certain amount of time, morning, night, by doing practices that the teachers give us, our sadhana is the word for that, spiritual practices, that that's going to limit our life somehow. That's going to cramp our style. But the beauty of it is that when we find that we just let God inspire us more and more and more, we are more of ourselves. It's really funny how that works. We don't become less ourselves. We just become, we have a bigger perspective. And it's such a relief. You know, it's really, it's hard when you are trying to be in control of everything. When you're trying to manage, micromanage everything in your life. And I know this as a Virgo sun, what it's like to want to organize everything. You know, just get it all perfect and all that. But, you know, and that's okay. But that isn't the answer. The answer is really always, even in the midst of organizing obsessively, is to just involve God in it. In fact, it's to laugh, to not take yourself so seriously. And that's the third way devotees rise, is just by being light. Devotee levity, you know? Not taking ourselves so seriously, having a good sense of humor. I mean, God has a great sense of humor. And when you ask him to share it with you, it's really sweet. Sometimes he talks to me through personalized license plates. You know, I'll be stuck in something and I'll drive along and all of a sudden there'll be this license plate go by and it's like, whoa, that was amazing. How did you do that? But he'll talk to us in the way that means something to us in our heart. You know, the particular way that we are, it's so sweet. It's a personal relationship. It's like the most special, divine, intimate relationship where you just know each other and you do special things for each other. When we offer ourselves up to God and ask his help, you know, then he responds. I want to share that there's a friend of mine up at Ananda Village that has been without work for a good while. And, you know, he's the breadwinner in the family for the most part and has done a great job for a number of years driving long distances to earn money for his family. And I had an inkling that he was out of work for a while, but I didn't know the circumstances. And then I just read recently that he got a job somewhere. So I emailed and I said, you know, great, heard about the job and, you know, what are the details on it? And he responded in such a way that tied in today. So it's a little cheating to have somebody else talk for you, but I'm going to do it anyway because it was so inspiring. I want to share what somebody else does in terms of how devotees rise. This is his response. In short, we are being taken care of by Divine Mother. When laid off in January at 58 with the economy tanking, I admit I had moments of anxiety and doubt. I wondered about my abilities and old patterns of self-doubt emerged. Interesting. Over 2 years ago, when feeling I was drifting spiritually, I made a redoubled effort in my sadhana meditation routine and devotional practices. Shortly thereafter, I realize in retrospect, a shift occurred at work. My star had fallen, the company experienced setbacks, and I had lost favor with management. The last year was one of great paradox. I suffered deeply at work as I realized I was no longer wanted or appreciated. Yet inwardly, I felt increasingly closer to Swamiji and Master. Master is Yogananda. Unemployed for 3.5 months, I volunteered at Ananda and attended the community meditations at Hansa Temple. I renewed my deep bond with my guru bhais, it's a word meaning the fellow devotees, and expressed and received much love from our Ananda family. All this helped balance the sleepless nights I sometimes experienced as I wondered how I would support our family while meeting our financial commitments. Now I see God's hand in it all. I'm serving now at X Community College District as their webmaster. The district is vast, encompassing 6 counties and 4 campuses, with 2 more on the way. To work in an academic environment after years of corporate intensity is so much more suitable for my particular devotee service ethic, which was devalued and disparaged in my previous job. I have been given a great deal of autonomy and feel welcomed and appreciated. The commute is half as long as my former commute and spectacularly beautiful with little traffic. I see now how sweet the love of God can be and how and am deeply moved. So I just want to share somebody else's view of how devotees rise, just to encourage you that, you know, when things are just a little iffy, when the economy is tanking, when our life is in crisis, when bills pile up, when unexpected things come our way, and when misunderstandings or confusions occur, the whole point, anytime that happens, when lessons come to us in school, the whole point is to help us learn from that. What's the answer? What's the answer to that test? The answer is always to put God first, to bring God into our lives. There's a great devotee of Ananda named Haridas, and he had a little word meant that it was spy dog, S-P-I-D-O-G, spy dog, solving problems in the direction of God. So whenever we're stuck, just always remember spy dog, you know? Just turn towards God, turn towards the light, always, always invite his help in everything we do. Make him central, and like Jesus said, seek first the kingdom of God and everything else is added to you. Try it. Blessings.